Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
It's called the Bay to Ocean Writers Conference, and it's in its 16th year. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. The conference is dedicated to the life and legacy of Gilbert Byron, a prolific writer of poetry, novels, short stories, and numerous essays. His writing embodies the spirit and way of life of the Eastern Shore, and he's been called the Chesapeake Thoreau and the voice of the Chesapeake. Conference takes place next February at the Chesapeake College in Y Mills, Maryland. To talk about the conference and the writers coming to the Eastern Shore, our in-studio guests are Diane Marquette. She is author of the Chesapeake Conference Mystery Series, and also Mala Bird and Laura Ambler, co-authors of the e-novel, A Big Sky Ranch. Well, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Diane, I'm going to turn to you. Describe a little bit about this conference, and especially the person that it's dedicated to, Gilbert Byron, who is obviously a prolific writer and has really been associated with the Chesapeake Bay.
Yes, Gilbert Byron was born in Chestertown. He graduated from Washington College and lived on the Eastern Shore most of his life. He did write a lot about the ways of the Eastern Shore, the watermen, the agricultural aspect, and he did earn a lot of titles, as you said, the Poet Laureate of the Eastern Shore and the Chesapeake Thoreau. In the 50s, Gilbert Byron taught high school, both at Easton High School and St. Michael's, and about 40 years later, some of his former students decided to have something to honor his memory. He had died just several years earlier. So around 1995, these people got together and formed this conference. And it was so popular, it was continued the next year, and it's still going on. So next February 23rd will be the 16th.
So if I'm going to this conference, what kinds of things are you talking about in terms of what might benefit me as a writer?
Well, we aim our conference at every level, beginning, intermediate, and even published writers. We try to have something for everyone. We cover both the art of writing, meaning the craft of it, actually how to do it, as well as the business of writing, because once you write something, unless you're going to keep it within the four walls of your own house, you want to get it published and you want to get it out there. And once it's published, you need to know how to market it. So it's a whole process. But the conference hopefully inspires people to get started. That's the main thing.
Because one of the things, and because I want to get to the platform stuff and so on, that particularly the internet, but one of the titles that struck me was, I guess, Creativity 101, remembering why you're a writer. That the suggestion is that you can get so caught up and trying to get your stuff on a platform and the rest of it, and the e-books and the selling of it and the promotion, that sometimes you forget that you're supposed to be a writer.
Well,
anybody? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think
Mala.
That's true, because all of us at the table here today are published authors, but publishing has changed so much in the last 10, 12 years that it's a very different animal than it was when I was first published in 1984. And now you have to be very, very responsible for your own marketing, creating an author platform. It takes a huge amount of time. And one of the things that a lot of the attendees at Bay to Ocean Writers Conference want to know about is how to do that, how to create an author platform. Where do you need to be on social media, for example? We have somebody who's talking this time in February about Pinterest.
Explain that.
Pinterest is a website that has boards, essentially bulletin boards, where people post pictures. And then you can repost a picture that you like, but you can also post, you can create your own board. So, for example, I've created a board of authors that I like. I've created a board for my own books. I've created a board for the play that Laura and I wrote for the Avalon Theater, the Santa Diaries, that's going to be performed this Christmas. But that's a relatively new thing. Nobody was talking about Pinterest last year, so just keeping up with what you need to do in terms of social media is a daunting task for authors these days.
Well, I think one of the beauties of this particular conference is it's always evolving, and we do evaluation forms that are very detailed at the end by every attendee, so we can see what the trends are and what things they'll be looking at wanting to attend the following year. And we try to stay abroad of the industry to hear what people are looking for. And a lot of times it is just creativity 101. I want to get started. I want to find that inner self as a writer again and not the platform part. But so we try to keep our hand on that and give them what they need.
So if I'm just going to start, if I want to start writing, or I've been writing but I haven't really gotten into it, what kinds of things can I learn in terms of just simply improving my writing at this conference? I
mean, there are many, many sessions that would help you with that. So even if you're a published author, it's always good to be reminded of the things that you need to do. But if you're a beginning writer, whether it's nonfiction or fiction or screenplays, there are some commonalities between all of those things. So if you're writing a story, whether it's a short story or a novel or even a nonfiction piece, you need to have an arc for your story. And we do have somebody who's going to talk about the progression of a story. We have somebody who's going to talk about, is what you are writing a short story or is it a novel? Because there's a difference. And sometimes you might think you're starting out thinking you're going to write a longer book, but it's really going to be a better piece of fiction if it's a short story. So we have we try to create all of those different avenues for people to learn. We have wonderful faculty that come to the Beta Ocean Writers Conference, people who are teachers at the Writers Center. We have people who've been published in a lot of different places, best-selling authors. This year we have a guy who wrote a thriller novel that became a bestseller e-novel on Amazon. He's now just emailed me the other day. It's probably going to become a motion picture. I mean, this is a huge local success story. And he's presenting two sessions for us this time. One, which is
Robert Bidinotto.
One is which is about how to write a thriller, because it's a genre. And there are some things that need to be in a thriller. And the other one is he's writing about, what is he writing about, Diane?
He's ebook marketing.
That's right, ebook marketing. Yeah. The 10 most important things you need to do to e-market your book.
So he's going to talk about his success, but more importantly, he's going to share the secrets. That's what we want to know. So his room will be filled.
And we're also really fortunate to have very personable and very speakers who are very giving of their time and very approachable and empowering. You know, they really want to be there. They've been in all of our seats, and they've been sitting in some of those sessions. So it's
do you find, by the way, writers are, I guess I'm certainly there at the conference, but do you find that writers are people who try to help other writers? Is there a certain camaraderie, do you think,
Absolutely.
Amongst writers?
I think so.
They do. Once they've achieved some level, not necessarily of success, but just some self-confidence, writing is such a solitary business. And whenever writers can get together and share successes, no one appreciates it more than another writer. Your spouse will be happy for you, your mother, but another writer will really get it.
They really do understand the agony of getting that written piece to the place where it could be published or be shown to somebody else. It's interesting to me that we often think that we're not so invested in our writing until other people start to read it and make comments, and then you know that this is like your child, and you don't. It's wonderful and fantastic and perfect, and it's hard to hear. But as writers, if we're going to be better writers, we need to hear their critiques and how we can make things better, which is one of the gifts, I think, of BTO, that people are so giving of their time and their expertise. And as you said, you used the word empowerment. I think that's a great word, because people come out of this conference and move on to do something.
Saying, I can do that.
Yeah.
You know, and not having a clue how to do it when you walked in. I think the amazing thing is the sense of community that, mm-hmm. that happens with this conference, because mm-hmm. we're there from probably 7 in the morning until 5 mm-hmm. that evening, and you're seeing the same people, and you're sitting with them in mm-hmm. sessions, and you're sharing stories, and having breakfast with them, and having lunch with mm-hmm. them, and it's yeah. just, it's, as Diane said, it's so solitary. It's just wonderful yeah. to have 200 other people like you there.
You get your batteries recharged.
You do.
Yes.
You do. And yeah. We see people come in the morning, and they just look like maybe they're in the wrong place. They're not comfortable. And at the end of the day, the fog has lifted, and they're motivated, and
they're smiling.
And they're inspired, and they're thanking us profusely, which is our paycheck, after
yes.
a year's volunteer work. And it's very rewarding. And the evaluations that Laura talked about are so revealing. You know, we don't put this on for ourselves. We want to give people what they want. And any feedback is definitely considered. And we ask them what they want to see the following year, who they want us to invite back as far as a speaker, because we have so many sessions going on at the same time. People can't get to everything they want to hear.
There are 30 sessions this year, so there are five different time slots, and each time slot people can choose from 6 different sessions. Mm-hmm. And it's our job to try to figure out how to fix that so people can go. For example, if somebody really just wanted to know about publishing and digital management and social media, they could essentially do a track. So we don't have all of those sessions in one time slot.
Right. They could go to a different session on a similar subject matter, go to one throughout the day, just mm-hmm. stay on the track and do one in each time slot.
So they could do the craft of writing if that's what they wanted to do, or social media.
Or poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, there's one section talking about editing, pitching, and
yes.
essays and nonfiction. Tell me a little bit about, because as a matter of fact, I could tell you that in journalism, you know, if you're a stringer, you got to constantly be pitching your story mm-hmm. to the editor. And there are all kinds of things that I can certainly tell, you know, students and people who want to get into this, what to pitch, you know, how to do that. What kinds of things do you think we might learn, and what kinds of tips do you have in terms of pitching those kinds of things?
Well, that's the session that Chris Baxter is doing, and he is an optioned
screenwriter.
And he brought this topic to us. He's presented for us. Last year he did something on dialogue in screenwriting, which is transferable to almost any other kind of writing. But he brought this topic to us, and we just thought it was such a great thing. It's about how to pitch. Because what you need is that 30-second log line or that 30-second elevator pitch. And a lot of writers, especially beginning writers, don't understand that. And you never know when you're going to meet somebody, and it might be in an elevator or in Starbucks, and you strike up a conversation, and that might be somebody who would know somebody who could take your work to another level.
Yeah. Writing is a lot about networking. And the luncheon that we have at the conference is billed as a networking luncheon. We don't have a speaker. This is a time for people to sit down with other writers and find out if they're having the same demons. And a lot of people come away with good contacts that they follow up with, even with contacts with the speakers. Because mm-hmm. as we talked about, everyone's very eager to help.
Even on the website, which is www.bay2ocean.com, we have bios of all of the presenters. And I don't think we have it on there yet, but in the conference program, almost all of those people give us an email address where conference attendees can email them if they have questions.
What do you think makes a strong pitch?
Knowing your story. And it's interesting because a log line sounds like a very easy thing to write, but it's probably more difficult than writing the whole piece. And I think as writers, it really helps you focus down to what really is your story. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it's easy to lose sight of that.
You know, when you have when you pick a book up in a bookstore and you turn it over, on the back there's maybe one paragraph, and that is the first introduction to the person holding that book as to what that book's about. That is crucial. Look at all the competition around them on the shelves. That's got to be a hook.
But the log line has to be even one tighter,
sentence.
My favorite example of the best log line ever is Snakes on a Plane.
You know exactly what you're getting.
That was a produced movie.
That's right.
It was, and
if you're in an elevator with somebody,
yes.
what script are you writing?
Right.
Oh, it's about snakes on a plane.
That's
immediately the visuals start popping.
So you've got to get it down to the absolute meat.
But I also think it's interesting that Chris says he's going to talk about presentation skills. Writing, we never knew that we had to have these skills as writers. This is new stuff for most of us. So having a session like this is a real gift, and a gift of his time and his ability to put that information together. And I suspect that one will be really heavily attended.
And I think the great thing about that, too, is that it applies to everything, whether mm-hmm. it's nonfiction, book yes. proposal, fiction, poetry, really any genre.
By the way, I want to address the poetry because, you know, most people, I mean, we know that poetry is still being written. Mm-hmm. But most poetry that we actually are exposed to is really lyrical poetry. That is, the lyrics that are put to songs mm-hmm. and so on, right? What's the market for poetry? How, you know, is it something worth, I mean, obviously it's something worth pursuing, but I mean, how, give me a sense of what you're of how important it is now and how successful one can be at it.
I think that's a really interesting question, and I think we can address that in terms of the interest of the people who come to Beta Ocean. Our poetry sessions are really important to our attendees, but those sessions are never as well attended as some of the others. We have some really incredible presenters. Sue Ellen Thompson comes back to us almost every year. She's a Pulitzer Prize nominated poet who lives locally in Oxford, and she's incredibly generous with her time to Beta Ocean. But this year she's also gotten Temple Cohn to come, and he's talking about haiku and how you would use haiku in poetry. And he's an instructor at the Naval Academy. And we have a poetry panel also this year. The question that you've asked actually is the questions that poets may want to ask. And none of us are poets. So the people who go to those sessions are people who are going to then have access to poets who can better answer that kind of question.
Because I guess I sometimes wonder whether there's a market for poetry, even though I know it's being written, right?
Well,
it is, and people
publish chapbooks, which are small books of their own poetry. So I think that's a way that they get their work out in front of people.
And
literary reviews as well.
Several of our speakers have published their own books of poetry, all poems. There definitely is a market for it. And I know you interviewed some of the people connected with the Delmarva Review recently.
That's right.
And a big part of that publication is dedicated mm-hmm. to promoting poetry.
By the way, I wanted to ask you also, we were talking, earlier about the agony of writing alone, right, as it were. One of the agonies, I think, well, maybe not so, is really the agony of revision. That is to write and then rewrite and then write again. And I know I've done some of this myself. And after the fourth or fifth or sixth time, you wonder whether or not the first one actually wasn't better than the last one. I mean, how do you? And you've all been writers. How do you deal with that? I mean, how do you figure it out? And I mean, is it an agonizing process or is it an enjoyable process?
One of the things that I think about is that until I get something on the page, I can't do revision.
Right.
So even if it's total crap, mm-hmm. I have to get something on the page, and then I can start the refining process. But I also think there's a point where it's helpful for me anyway to step away and put something in the drawer and let it marinate for a while. Mm-hmm. It's also at some point helpful to have other people read it.
Absolutely.
Laura and I both belong to the Working Writers Forum in Easton. Which
I actually met through the Beta Ocean conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so if we get to a certain point in our writing, we present it to the forum, and then we have 12 other writers who critique our work. And sometimes it's kind of hard to hear.
Truman Capote said you have to murder your darlings. every word that we put down, we think is the best word ever. And the thought of cutting them is painful, but we can't be subjective or objective about our writing. We can't. And you give it to your spouse, and you're going to get one type of feedback. But that's why there are editors. There are independent editors in this world that you can hire. And they will give you, first of all, an idea of how saleable your work might be and how marketable it might be. And at the Bait Ocean Writers Conference, we even offer a manuscript review service that people can find out about on the website, baitocean.com. It's something that they set up an appointment for the day of the conference, and they meet one-on-one with one of our editors, and who has already read 25 pages and written a short critique. And that is very valuable. That is a very valuable service, and we see that becoming more and more popular every year.
And but it's not all that expensive.
No.
I have spent a lot more
than
that. Oh, a this lot is more than that.
Very reasonable. Very, very reasonable. And to spend 15 minutes with someone who is trained, who does this for a living, and first of all, just hear if your idea is workable and doable, even if they tell you throw out everything you've written, but your concept is great, don't let it go. That's huge, hearing that from a professional.
I wonder, by the way, because I noticed that both Mala and Laura, you are co-authors.
Yes.
Right? The Big Sky Ranch. First, tell me a little bit about the book, what it's about. But second of all, how is being a co-author different than, say, just writing your own book? I mean, now you got two people fighting over all the sentences in front of you. What was that? Tell us first. What's the book? A little bit about the book. What's the setup there?
You want to give the log line?
Log line.
The log
line. What's a log line?
The story is about a group of teenage girls who get sent to a last chance ranch in Montana.
At-risk girls.
At-risk girls. Yeah. And what happens to them?
Okay. So what was it like? To co-author.
Well, we met in our working writers forum, and we realized that we had fairly similar writing styles, which is not true of everybody in our forum. And so we had lunch one day, and we said, "Well, let's work on a project together."
We pitched about 10 things to each other, none of which worked. And I'm a screenwriter originally, and I had this written as a screenplay years back, and I said, "Well, why don't we drag this out and kind of use it as the bones and maybe try to write a novel together?" And it was wonderful, actually.
Yeah,
it was really interesting process.
I remember you telling me that it was good to collaborate because you gave each other deadlines.
Absolutely.
One would work on a chapter and have it back to them a certain date. Yep. Or a certain day, and then you knew that
If we knew that on Thursday we were meeting and we were supposed to have this chunk done, we got it done.
Yeah.
Even if we had to stay up late to do it, you got it done because there was a deadline.
Yeah. And that's the hard thing for every writer. I mean, if things aren't going well, you can just put it in a drawer and walk away.
And go clean your house or work in the garden or
whatever. Oh, you can find a thousand things more important.
Cleaning my house was not one of them,
not
but that's
them,
okay.
But
clean the litter box.
Working
clean
on your car box. Or mowing the lawn or something.
Exactly,
anything.
So is it that each of you, like, had a chapter to write or a set of chapters?
We've
or
done
was it or
so
how did
many
it,
different ways.
Yeah, how did I mean
we really have.
Tell me a little bit
we've
about
done
that.
Chapters.
We've done characters. We've said you take this character and follow her through the end of the book and I'll take this one. Chapters.
And after we had things written, we would go back and we would overwrite. So I would take the chapter she had written, she would take the chapter I or the scene, and we would go over and so it's pretty seamless. I don't even know anymore
who wrote what.
Which do you prefer, writing alone or writing or collaborating?
I like collaborating, actually, because I think I'd find too many other things to do. I'm a Gemini. I'm a great starter. I'm not a terrific finisher. So this meant that we finished a lot of projects. So, we've done that book. We have a draft of a sequel to that book. We've done a number of screenplays, and we collaborated on this play for the Avalon, which has just been tremendous fun.
By the way, tell me a little bit about the play that you've done.
Last year we wrote a book to benefit Christmas in St. Michael's called The Santa Diaries, and we collected memories of from the Bay 100 area and Christmas memories. And we always knew, we said to ourselves, there's no story arc in that, it's memories, but we said, it's a great title, we should write a movie script. It's a romantic comedy kind of thing.
Just touching all of those people about their Christmas memories for about 6 or 8 months made you realize how important it is and what a large part that it plays for people.
But we got sidetracked with other projects and it sort of got on the back burner. But the Avalon approached us about writing a Christmas play, and we looked at each other and we, you know, we
sure, why not?
They wanted us to pitch. They said, come and pitch some ideas. And we looked at each other and said, well, we do have an idea. So we pitched them the idea. And we knew that it would get us further along the track of writing that movie script, because now we have a fully developed story arc and characters. And so when we're finished,
it's a romantic musical comedy, yeah, and it's absolutely community theater. Everyone's involved. We have over 50 children in the production. And so it's kind of been an ongoing process for us too. As it's evolved and more people become part of the play, we'll write a new scene in incorporating these characters. If some of the kids have special talents, we can write a part directly for those kids.
So we did have a phone call or a little meeting one day where they said, oh, by the way, we need you to write in 11 more children's parts and 3 more adults. And we need it. And then this little sotto voce, when we need it by Monday morning.
It's been a great experience. It's amazing.
And you mentioned that there's music to this as well. I mean, with words and songs. And so you're not just simply writing like, you know, dialogue or something, but you're writing songs.
Not writing the songs. Laura's written the songs.
It's
all writing. It's lyrics.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it was interesting in that process because you knew where those songs needed to go in the script, and we sort of saw what was there, and then we had some words, and you said, I need to take the words home over the weekend and think about them, and you came back with lyrics.
Mm-hmm. And then the melodies come from where? Do you write the melodies, or...?
Well, there's a number of people working on that.
Oh, I'm working, and then you just... So mm-hmm. they may say, okay, here's what this sounds like. Give me a set of words, or mm-hmm. okay, all right. I mean, because I can't remember the writing team, but I remember seeing a film about a couple of major writers. I don't know if it was Rodgers and Hammerstein, but in which one wrote the words and one wrote the music, mm-hmm. and obviously there was some in the film. Of course, there was some clash about whether or not who was going to do what, and he didn't like this and that kind of thing. And so that's really interesting. Because this is the 21st century, of course, we've got the internet and for writers. How do you think, we talked a little bit about this, how do you think the internet has changed writing in terms of the opportunities that people now have that perhaps they didn't have before?
It's the Wild West, and this probably started 7 years ago, I'd mm-hmm. say seriously, where it started impacting kind of even the local community of writers. There's so many options and opportunities now.
It used to be the traditional way for a writer to get published would be to get an agent, which is no small feat, and then have that agent get a publishing contract. And that is becoming less and less the way to go. Now it's more self-publishing. And there's lots of options online. Probably one of the biggest right now is Amazon.com. You can go on there and publish a print version of your book. You can also publish an e-book version, and they will help you with the marketing. Why wouldn't they? And they're
but,
huge
seller.
You
know, who knew 7 years ago we'd be reading books on our phones?
That's right.
You know?
And it changes constantly. And the team that we have at the Writers Conference, who talks about all the digital options for publishing and marketing, they are up to date. They come back every year because they know their stuff. They're good presenters, and they get great reviews. So.
Well, one of the people that we have who comes every year, we invite him back because he gets such good reviews from the attendees, is Greg Wilhelm. And his the title of his session is The Evolution of the Book, Publishing Options in the 21st Century. But his talk is different every year mm-hmm. because the speed mm-hmm. of the technology moves so fast. It's very hard, and sometimes as writers, it's very frustrating to try to keep up because it's time-consuming, and then that takes away from your time writing.
Sure. Okay, we got to end it there. It's been a fascinating conversation. This, of course, is the Beta Ocean Writers Conference. It's in February. We've been talking with Diane Marquette. She's author of the Chesapeake Conference Mystery Series. Also, Marla Burt and Laura Ambler, they are co-authors of an e-novel, Big Sky Ranch. We appreciate you all coming to talk with us. You've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.